Welcome to the Odds Breakers, number one place for shared, sharp betting information.
Welcome back, College Hoops fans, to Podcast 17 of 2019. I'm your host, Kiev O'Neill. You can follow us at the Odds Breakers on Twitter or on Instagram and Facebook /TheOddsBreakers. This episode is being brought to you by uwager.eu for a 100% match bonus of deposits up to $500. Please use the promo code TheOddsBreakers. For first-time users, terms and conditions apply. If you'd like to help us out with our costs, be a sponsor of us, we would love to help you out. Please visit theoddsbreakers.com and for $12.99 a month, become a premium subscriber where we will give you my premium picks before the line moves. For $2 more, you can become a patron subscriber and get all that, plus the podcast a little bit early. And if nothing else, please visit theoddsbreakers.com and become a free picks newsletter subscriber. We have a fantastic show for you today. March Madness is here, and we break down the games with special guest Kyle Hunter from HunterSportsPicks.com. But first, I want to make sure that you have went to theoddsbreakers.com to sign up for our free NCAA tournament bracket. Completely free. All you need to do is log on to the link at cbssports.com. It'll send you to from the Odds Breakers. Look for the newsletter, free NCAA tournament bracket. Sign up, fill out your bracket, retweet the last podcast, take a snapshot of it, send it to admin@theoddsbreakers.com. And you'll be entered to win $250 for first, $150 for second, and $50 for third. You can get that done in seconds. I also want to quick bring up FanVest Wagering Exchange. It's the stock market of all sports. FanVest is a digital exchange that lets you invest in and trade fantasy sports teams like stocks to monetize your sports knowledge without losing your wallet. FanVest replaces complicated odds with intuitive, tradable fantasy sports teams whose values are determined by the marketplace. FanVest is launching a free-to-play March Madness Portfolio Challenge on Selection Sunday, March 17th, with a $5,000 cash prize for the winning portfolio. Beyond simply picking a bracket, which locks you in for the entire tournament, FanVest lets you play through the final round. On Selection Sunday, sign up for free on FanVest Wagering Exchange to receive 1,000 fan bucks to build your portfolio teams you think will advance. Team shares are priced on historical win percentage, which just adjusts as the tournament progresses, allows you to reinvest the remaining teams after each round. If you're bullish on a particular team, you can increase your exposure the way a bracket won't let you, or get rewarded by picking a lower seeded team or any of them. So much less risk busting your bracket, and you are always playing. Join FanVest at FanVest Wagering Exchange for your shot at the $5,000 prize, and everyone in the top 10 gets at least 100 bones. You know what I'm going to be in? This is a fun, new, totally free way to participate in March Madness and the NCAA tournament. Join us at FanVest Wagering Exchange .com on Selection Sunday. All right, without further ado, let's get right into it with Kyle Hunter from Hunter Sports Picks. Right on. All right, now I'd like to welcome back a great guest and well-known handicapper in the industry, Mr. Kyle Hunter. You can follow him at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Check out his website at huntersportspicks.com. How you been, Kyle?
Hey, I'm doing great. This is a great time of the year. I love this time of the year as a fan and a Beloved is sports better also. You can't beat the first week of March Madness.
No, man. Everybody's excited. Everybody's filling out their brackets. Everyone thinks their team has a chance. All these crazy odds out there. There's one I just saw posted, minus 190 over 1.5 one seeds to make it. You know, you think Duke, North Carolina, Virginia right there. Then you look at the two seeds like Michigan State and Kentucky, you know, and John Beilein's Michigan. You know, and it's like, wait a second here, pump the brakes. So, you know, there's some legitimate teams that can make a run here, aren't there?
Absolutely. I think this is, Duke's a good team. They have the highest upside of anybody. I think that's unquestionable, but you have to win every single game. You know, that's what's beautiful about the NCAA tournament is you can't have one misstep. And I don't think that Duke's so good that they couldn't lose this. I mean, you know, there are plenty of teams here who are capable of winning this tournament. I think that makes it more fun than if you already know who's going to win it.
Absolutely. I mean, you see Baltimore, Maryland last year. Of course, they're going to be talking about this for 10 years, unfortunately, for Virginia. But if Virginia can lose to them, then you know Duke could lose to, you know, a five seed. I mean, Duke's got a few issues with three-point shooting and free throw shooting. You never know what happens at the end. You know, not even the best players can stop one player that's all of a sudden just shooting out of his mind 75-80% from all over the three-point line. That happens in this tournament. That's why people love to pick upsets, you know, and it's just so exciting. And I cannot wait to get watching, starting tonight with the play-in games, my man. Well, let's get right into it. Snubs, real quick. Is there any teams you think that really deserve to be in?
Well, first of all, I think you have to say that the bubble was extremely weak this year. You know, a lot of the teams that were being talked about here were really not very good. So, you know, I don't think we can say, oh, this really good team just missed out. I mean, I think there's several teams who got in that are pretty questionable teams. I will say I'm surprised that TCU didn't make it in. Now, the Big 12, a really tough conference. As deep as that conference is, I would have figured TCU would be in it. The other I would have guessed would be the SoCon. Southern Conference was really strong this year. I think either Furman or UNC Greensboro probably should have been in the bracket. Greensboro didn't help their cause at all by just getting absolutely blasted by Wofford in the two regular season games. But I think, Southern Conference was under the radar, really a strong conference this year. And I always want those mid-major teams to get a chance, and not too many of them actually get one.
Yeah, that's for sure, man. You know, everyone's talking about, you know, the Clemson and North Carolina State. Well, you know, they weren't even in the top of their half of their conference. I mean, it's just like, I would rather give somebody that's got snubbed because they had a bad game in their tournament, yet they're the best team, just like, you know, you're talking about a little bit, rather than the seventh or eighth best team in the ACC, right? You know, they did not do enough to get in. And this is a big field. I don't want to expand it anymore. I think it's perfect at 68, right, with playing games out of 353 teams, right? So they don't have any excuse. If you can't even be in the top of your division, you know, you shouldn't even be in the tournament. Let's get into anything that's misseeded, Kyle. There's one that sticks out to everybody, the Michigan State one. Everyone's complaining about that. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Michigan State as a two seed is not what really bothers me. It's more that they're in the same bracket as Duke. You know, they beat Michigan three times. They won the Big Ten title. No love for Michigan State. You know, and I wouldn't consider myself a Michigan State fan per se. I liked him, Tom Izzo, and I think that, you know, they're a team that I respect quite a bit. Michigan State, though, why aren't they in the position that Michigan's in right now? Michigan gets a rematch against Montana from last year. I don't know who could be terribly excited to see Michigan and Montana again. I remember watching that game last year. Gosh, that was pretty bad stuff. I mean, it's just really ugly game. Michigan won, not because they played well, just they were a little bit better than Montana. But, you know, Michigan State could easily be in that spot to where, you know, they have Gonzaga as the team at the top of the bracket instead of Duke. I'm surprised because that would kind of imply that they thought Michigan State was the weakest of the two seeds, which I don't think is the case.
No, I think they're the best, and they could have been a one seed. On the other side of the coin, it's kind of unfair to Duke a little bit. If they're really the one seed in the East, why do they have to play the best number two seed in Michigan State? You know, you've seen their body of work, what they've done in the Big Ten, how consistent they are. They're just really, really good at everything, like top 15 in everything. You know, every team's got flaws, but Michigan State doesn't really show any flaws. You know, they're just, you know, really poised. Great coaching, obviously, with Izzo. You know, so Duke really got punished there, but maybe the committee's punishing Duke a little bit for recruiting the top three out of five, three of the top five recruits this year. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but the committee does some weird things, right? So, you know, Michigan State, they had some bad, you know, things that happened in their athletic department. A lot of people thought they didn't get punished well enough. Maybe that's part of the reason too.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. I'll say a few other teams that I think have, you know, were poorly seeded. Villanova, I mean, what did they do wrong? Marquette gets a 5 seed. Nova wins the regular season title, the Big East Conference Tournament, and they're seeded lower than Marquette. That doesn't make any sense to me. Jay Wright's a tremendous coach. He's proven that at this point. Top 5 coach in the country. Nova lost a ton from last year, obviously. And we know how good they've been the last 3 seasons, and they're not that good this season. But I still think a 6 seed was too low for them. I think that, you know, if you put Marquette as a 5 seed, Villanova has to at least be a 5 seed, or it doesn't make any sense.
I agree, and I think the reason the committee would justify Marquette, though, is their non-conference beating Louisville and Kansas State, Wisconsin, Buffalo. You know, that's when they'll use the excuse to go back like that, be like, well, look at their non-conference victories. But the thing that doesn't make sense is you look at a team like Washington that's in the tournament. They don't even have a top 50 win. Right. You know, now you're a top 50 win. You have a team out there like Lipscomb that maybe doesn't either, but, you know, has been a top team all year, getting snubbed. You know, there's a lot more teams that I can argue should have had a chance over a Washington team that doesn't even have a top 50 win. So the committee just kind of uses an argument that just justifies what they say. And, you know, to be honest with you, we shouldn't get all that mad because we have a tournament of 64 teams when college football is 4 teams. Right. So at least we have that. And, you know, the teams can always say, just be better next year. But yeah, the hottest team, definitely Villanova. You look at Marquette losing, 5 of the last 6 games. Not a good look for them. All right, well, let's move into the next questions for the arenas. We're looking actually at what – is there any total factors here in some of these arenas that they play that favor the over or the under?
Well, first of all, I'll say just as a kind of a general statement, the under usually does a little bit better in the NCAA tournament than does the over. And that's largely because these are neutral sites. These are not places where these kids have played usually. A couple of these are places where some teams would have played, Colonial Life Arena in South Carolina, one of them. But you know, keep in mind, a lot of these are really big venues. As far as the mid-major teams and the you know, 15 seeds, the 14 seeds, stuff like that, they're not going to play in anything nearly this big in the regular season. The sight lines are much different. The shooting backdrops far more difficult. The under has more value than does the over in general. Also, public bettors like to bet the over. So keep that in mind, as a lot of these lines do get bet up. There are some of these that there's going to be sharp money take the under. But, you know, we'll look at some specific arenas here. I mentioned Colonial Life Arena in South Carolina. 103-93 to the under. So you've got 196 games, a fairly decent sample size, a little bit to the under. I will say the under is 60-45 at a total of 137 or higher. So you start pushing the numbers up, you get some unders there. XL Center in Hartford, 20-17 to the under, 9-3 to the under with a total of 135.5 or higher. So you find a couple of them here where the under may have a little bit of value if you get a total that goes up higher. I will say that, you know, on the small sample size ones like, you know, 20-17, I would caution you to not read too much into something like that. But those are a couple right there. The SAP Center in San Jose, I don't have any data on that one. I don't know if that's a new arena or if they just haven't played there before. But nothing on that one. The BOK Center in Tulsa, 5-1 to the over. So I will say, don't go just blindly bet the overs because I said they were 5-1 to the over at this place in Tulsa, because, you know, 5-1 is such a small sample size that I wouldn't read anything into this. I think the Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines is a place where we've seen enough games to where we can show that the under does have value here. 129 unders, 109 overs, 97-75 to the under with a total of 132.5 or higher, which obviously isn't very high of a number. I think this is one of the better under arenas in the tournament there in Des Moines at the Wells Fargo Arena. So keep that one in mind as you're handicapping these games. Veterans Memorial in Jacksonville, 15-11 to the under. Not a big enough sample size to know much there. If you move the numbers there to a higher total, it doesn't do much of anything. And then Nationwide Arena in Columbus, 7-5 to the under. This is a place I've been very many times before. Nothing strikes me as bad about this venue for shooters. It's a really nice place. I don't think this is a big under arena at all.
Yeah, definitely the low sample sizes to watch out for. But like you said, with Wells Fargo, you got a larger one there to the under. Colonial Life, it looks like 103-93 to the under. Absolutely. Those are two that people should probably key in. Yeah, the SAP Center's been around since 1993 from what I'm seeing online. So maybe they just haven't played there that much. I don't know. It could have been a renovation too. But you know, some just don't have the data that we can really check out for tournaments. Let's look into some of the home court advantages in the tournament. Are there any that stick out to you?
Well, I'm going to say the one here that's close to home for me. I'll say Cincinnati with a really big home court advantage in Columbus against both Iowa and then Tennessee if they make it to there. And I'll say, you know, as someone who I'm going to the game on Sunday. So, you know, I'm hoping Cincinnati is in that game, partially because I root for Cincinnati from there since I'm from Ohio. You know, if they're not playing Ohio State, but I root for Cincinnati if they're not playing Ohio State. And then also, I really want it to be a good environment. You know, I want there to be a bunch of Bearcats fans at the same time there's a bunch of North Carolina and Tennessee fans, things like that. So I think Cincinnati will have a very big home court advantage in Columbus. Cincinnati basketball fans are a pretty passionate group. I think there's going to be plenty of them there. I think that makes that a really tough first game for Iowa, a team that's already been, you know, slumping a bit. So big home court advantage there for Cincinnati. I think that New Mexico State, they're not right by home here, Salt Lake City. So I'm not saying, you know, they just have a short bus trip or something like that. It's that they play at altitude at home. I mean, they're used to the high elevation. Auburn is certainly not used to that. Nothing about Auburn would make them accustomed to playing at a high elevation. Right. Nothing in the SEC would make them accustomed to that. So,
right.
You know, that hurts Auburn, certainly. I'm not saying New Mexico State's going to win that game. I just think that is something that plays into the factor to help out New Mexico State in some way. UC Irvine, the other one I'll say, really nice home court advantage there in that game against Kansas State. You know, Kansas State's a team that a lot depends on Wade's health. You and I both know this. This is a guy that means a lot to this team. You know, Kansas State's going to play good defense regardless of whether he's in there or not. But they're not very good offensively if Wade's not playing. And if he's not playing, you know, that hurts Kansas State's upside quite a bit.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit more about that game for sure coming up here. Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Cincinnati in their backyard there, man. It's like Iowa's going to play Ohio State almost right there. New Mexico State, I looked at that one. It's a far travel, but it's still the West Coast and it's in the mountains. Like you said, it makes total sense. Auburn, you know, has an interesting spot right there. UC Irvine, definitely a nice home court advantage against K-State. That's what everyone's thinking. And plus, does everyone want to travel there from K-State thinking D Wade's not going to play, right? So, that very, very good points on that one. Well, my man, let's get into some games, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's start right out with Minnesota versus Louisville. Louisville's laying about 5 points. The over under is at 135. This game is in Des Moines, Iowa. Any thoughts in this one?
Well, I mean, this is the game that's at the venue that's been a bit of an under venue. And I say the way I want to start this out is I'll say what the bets are looking like on the odds screen. Louisville has 63% of the public bets so far. Minnesota getting 52% of the money. So you could say there's a bit of a sharp tilt toward Minnesota in this game. I would disagree with that. I think Louisville is my lean in this one. I don't know that I'm going to play this game. Minnesota is a really inconsistent team. I think Louisville's probably the best number seven seed in this tournament. I'd have to lay the points here pass. If you look at KenPom, he has a luck factor, which I like to look at this, especially in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. See who got lucky, who got unlucky. Louisville's 301st in luck factor this year. So they got very unlucky, 301st out of 353 teams, according to KenPom. Minnesota 24th in luck factor. So they certainly got lucky this season. Minnesota, not a good shooting team. They rely heavily on getting offensive rebounds. Louisville, much better on the defensive glass than most teams that Minnesota would be playing throughout the course of the season. I also think there's some bias against Louisville because everybody remembers Louisville with that collapse against Duke and then how they played right after that. But Louisville really has been a pretty solid team this season outside of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Louisville, gosh, you know, they started out really well here. Maybe some of that Minnesota money is that whole will Rick Pitino, Richard Pitino avenge his father? You know, so, like, you know, you want, I mean, it's silly. You know, it's absolutely silly. And he's many times saying he's his own man. Look, whatever my dad did, it doesn't matter. Yeah, I think that's a stupid narrative. But of course, everybody's talking about it. So you wonder. The other factor is Minnesota is only 240 miles from Des Moines, Minneapolis, there, right down I-35. So I guess that's kind of a home court advantage. And I don't know how excited Louisville fans are going to travel there after, you know, I think they had maybe a little bit higher expectations. They did make the tournament there, but that's the only thing I could think of. You know, the Gophers average about 46.6 field goals at home. If you're going to look at the home, of course, away, they average only 40.7 field goals. So they're a terrible away team. So what's going to happen here? Jordan Murphy and Amir Curry, very, very good players. You know, Louisville, they average about 72.7 points per game on the road. They give up about 69.7. They've shown greatness. You know, remember they almost beat Duke. They choked that away. They beat North Carolina on the road.
Yeah.
I believe they beat Michigan State too. Louisville, they're more capable of blowing this team out. Louisville's got the better offense and defense. But the last month, they've just been kind of ice cold in the ACC, and Minnesota had a nice little run, beating Purdue twice, Penn State, and Northwestern. My raw numbers have Louisville by 4.5, but if this was really a truly neutral spot, and those are raw numbers, if the Gophers really have a home court advantage, I lean Minnesota plus the points, but this is definitely not a play for me right now.
Yeah, let me say one more thing about that game. I think the Louisville fan base does travel pretty well, so I think that that won't be quite as much of a home court advantage as what it might seem like it would be. I will say, but I like your point about the, you know, the Pitino narrative here. If you're going to bet Minnesota in this game, I don't know that I'm going to bet Louisville, and it would not surprise me if Minnesota covers the number. I'm not saying that I think Louisville is any kind of lock. You know, there is no such thing, obviously, but. You know, if you're going to bet Minnesota, don't use the Pitino narrative as your reason for doing it, because that would be the worst reason to bet Minnesota.
Absolutely. Please do not do that. It has nothing to do with it. I mean, if anything, maybe Louisville would be mad, you know, and come in extra motivated, want to beat his son. I don't, you can look at things both ways. It's a stupid narrative. Please do not buy into those things. And if anything, use some of those narratives to your advantage.
Right.
You know, so, you know, be watching the line. I don't have that big of a side on this one. Let's move into another game that everyone's talking about. Yale versus LSU. LSU laying about 7 points now. It's down to 7. Over-under's 159.5. That's a pretty tall over for 7 points when you're looking at an LSU team that should have been a 2 seed possibly if their coach Will Wade wasn't suspended and they didn't blow that first game against Florida here. Do you have some thoughts on this one?
Yeah, first of all, Yale getting 62% of the bets, 60% of the money. So, you know, this is a public underdog. This is also, you know, the sharps don't mind this one either. So this one's both ways. You know, I think there's some sharp money on Yale. I think there's some public money on Yale at this point. I can't lay the points with LSU in this game. You know, LSU has far too many question marks for me to be laying 7 or 7.5 points. Tons of talent for LSU. No doubt they have the talent to, you know, run Yale off the court if they're playing their best. The problem for me is LSU has been pretty inconsistent this year. Let's look at their bad showings this year. Mm-hmm. A loss to Oklahoma State on a neutral. Overtime comeback win against Missouri. That was a game that they should have lost. Missouri really collapsed in that game. LSU played a ton of overtime games this year. 6 overtime games. LSU, their huge thing on offense is they're so good on the offensive glass. I think the big key in this one, can Yale get the defensive rebounds? That's what they've got to focus on here. LSU can't get 2 or 3 shots every time. You know, they do that, they're going to win this game, probably cover the number. I think as far as a 14 and a 3 seed, if you had to pick, you know, I'm going to take 1 14 seed over a 3 seed as a big upset. Now, I'm not going to pick it in my bracket, so that's not what I mean. But I do think Yale's a pretty solid 14 seed. You know, they played some pretty tough non-conference games. This is a Yale team that has a lot of veterans on it. Some pretty high-end talent also. I think this is a team that's much better than a normal 14 seed. Could a huge upset happen here? I think it's at least possible. I would lean to the over in this game, too. I think the fact that it's a 7-point spread would suggest that there's certainly the chance there could be a lot of fouling at the end of the game. You know, you get a spread of 6, 6.5, 7, 8 points, somewhere in there. If it's actually that at the end of the game, I mean, I know you've seen this and we've all seen it. At the end of these games, it can get really epic, these foul fests.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, there could be 30 points in the last 2 minutes and it wouldn't be totally stunning if the spread is at that. So I would lean toward Yale here. I don't love that the public likes this so much, and I'll say that several times here today. You know, the trendy underdogs have not done well in the long run. So that's my biggest negative on taking Yale here. The biggest plus to taking Yale is I feel like LSU has lots of turmoil right now.
You know, with Will Wade suspended, the Tigers are going to completely give up on this season, and they're just going to go in there and fold. That's what, you know, that's what everybody's saying right now. You know, I mean, they don't care. It's their best season they had since 2006. I got to tell you, I hate the situation at LSU, but I really like the spot here. I think the fact that this happened before the SEC tournament and they dropped that team and dropped this game at Florida really makes me think that LSU can pull this one together and kind of make up for their season. They lose this game, nobody's even going to remember the season here. You know, so I love the fact that everybody's dogging LSU, and you can just keep watching this line coming down here. But the truth is, this LSU team, you're right, they've played down to teams that were bad, and they played up to teams that were good. But the fact that everybody is down on them, and trust me, they're watching SportsCenter, these kids. These kids are watching everybody downing them. They know what these spreads are. I have a feeling guys like Nas are going to go out there and absolutely go completely off. You know, you look at Yale. Yeah, they've had a hard schedule, but their best game was against Miami. Sorry, their best win was against Miami. And that was 77-73. They dropped to Memphis. They dropped to Vermont. When they played Duke, they lost by 33 points. If you are ever going to be on LSU without their coach, I think this is possibly the best spot to start backing them. So personally, I'm going to play LSU when this line goes as far down as it possibly can.
I was going to say, I think you make some fair points there. I like the point about the fact that LSU has that one game that they already blew one game. So they had the first game against Florida. That was their ugly game right after the Will Wade news. If the Will Wade news had just broken right before the NCAA tournament, I would definitely bet Yale in this game. No doubt about that. I likely won't bet Yale. I think it's too much of a public underdog for my liking. And I will say, I think that this line might even go down some more. I won't be surprised if we get LSU minus 6.5 here. So I think if you like LSU, you probably want to wait.
Yeah, absolutely. Just, I think this narrative is just going to keep going. People licking their chops. I wonder what the sharps' real side is going to be. That's something you don't always know until an hour or two before the game, but you definitely, you know, want to keep watching this line. And you don't have to bet it. Just, you know, if you kind of think in LSU, watch it for a little while. You know, right now it's trending down. You could have a very good opportunity if you believe, just like I said, that the spot looking good. Well, let's stay in the SEC, my man. Just like you talked a little bit about New Mexico State playing in the mountains, right? Versus Auburn. Auburn's laying minus 6.5 points over under 133.5 in Salt Lake City, Utah. What do we have?
Well, first of all, this line was 7.5 to start. So we've seen a line move in the favor of New Mexico State. 59% of the bets on New Mexico State, 69% of the money on New Mexico State. I think both the public and the sharps like New Mexico State in this spot. Can't blame them. If it was still 7.5, I might bet New Mexico State in this one. I will say, you know, you get down to 6, you know, this thing might go to 5.5. If you get down in there, things change a little bit. You know, that there's a pretty big difference between 5.5 or 6 versus 7.5. You know, Auburn, if they're going to let a team in the back door, you know, it's going to be hard to do so if you only have 5.5 or 6 points. So I think that the line move has hurt New Mexico State's value quite a bit. I will say, I think New Mexico State's a really balanced team. Really, really good on the glass. 8th in offensive rebounding percentage in the country. Auburn's defensive rebounding has been a problem this year. You know, Auburn's underachieved this year for most of the year. Then they played a lot better here of late. Auburn is a high volume threes team. They're going to shoot a lot of three pointers. There can be a lot of variance there. Altitude, a clear positive for New Mexico State. This is a trendy underdog pick, though, and that certainly worries me. I think Chris Jans is a really good coach there for New Mexico State. New Mexico State is first in the country in bench minutes. I wanted to point that one out. That's pretty important here because you might get gassed a little bit quicker than you would in another location. Auburn, not a really deep team. So I guess if I had to pick this one, I would lean toward New Mexico State. I think this is a very difficult call, though, and I'm almost sure I won't have any money on this game.
Yeah, this line got pounded down a little bit. I thought it opened around 8, and it's down to 6.5. Was that about right?
Yeah, 7.5 was the Chris open, the bookmaker open. So I think there might have been some 8s at some of the other offshores. You know, 6 is the number at a lot of the books now, so it's definitely got hit down.
You know what's funny? This was my 5-12 upset because I'm not picking Wisconsin's upset. The reason is because this is the least one probably picked here, but that doesn't, and I thought I was going to bet it, but I'm not, but now I'm not so sure after I started capping it. And I wanted a better number. This line, like you said, 7.5, 8 down to 6.5 or 6, 59% of the tickets on New Mexico State and 82% of the money from what I'm seeing, you know, and I don't know why this is an early sharp side. I mean, maybe it's they think they're going to let down and it's the mountains, like you said, a little bit better for New Mexico State. But, you know, the numbers that I run and any public power rating out there pretty much says that it should be about 6.5 or 7, right? It's not like, you know, you're getting a big advantage moving a point or two off of that. So I didn't understand the line move. I wonder if it's a setup. But you know, both teams are red hot. I mean, Auburn hasn't been the best road team. They shoot only 41.5% on the road, scoring 73.5, giving up 72.4. But they proved on the neutral court they can score. New Mexico State has been on a tear. They haven't lost since January 3rd. You know, they haven't lost since pretty much 2018. Yeah, their schedule's been real easy, though, right? You know, they shoot a nice 46.4% on the road. And they score about 77 points on the road, give up 66. So there's a big variance there. The only thing you can slam them is their schedule. But they're only top 100 wins on KenPom are, you know, if you look at the top 100 teams are Utah Valley and That's it. You know, they pretty much lost bad against St. Mary's. They did keep up with Kansas. They only lost to three by Kansas when Kansas was healthy. So, I mean, that's something to hang on here. But my numbers have this about 77 to 70 and a half. Auburn should win by about 6.5 points-ish on my raw numbers. So, you know, I was going to give a little back for home field to New Mexico and for the location and the mountains and the letdown factor because, you know, Bruce Pearl said this one was for Charles Barkley after he won the SEC championship. And that just screams letdown all over the place. But right now it's no play for me. I'm leaning New Mexico State plus 6.5. So I think we're in agreement right there. Any final thoughts?
No, I mean, I think we've covered that. Basically, this is a tough game. This one's right about on the number. I don't see any great value.
All right, let's move right on then. We have plenty more games here. Murray State versus Marquette. Marquette laying about 4.5 points. Over-under is 149. This game is played in Hartford, Connecticut. This is another trendy dog, isn't it, Kyle?
This is absolutely another trendy dog. 65% of the bets on Murray State here, 51% of the money. So not everybody agrees there. But I have to say, right as we're talking, I see this line moving. And this one certainly intrigues me. I see a 3.5 at Bookmaker. Marquette minus 3.5. That's getting pretty cheap. But that's tempting to me. I think that Marcus Howard's health is my question mark here. If I knew he were completely healthy, I'd bet Marquette, not even think about it. Howard's definitely been bothered by that wrist injury here lately. He missed a bunch of free throws in that Seton Hall game, which if you watch that game, anybody who watched that game, that was one of the most ridiculous games as far as the ref show that happened in the second half in that game. I think it was like 55 free throws in the second half alone, something like that. You know, I could go off on a tangent here, so I'll try to cut it short, but I will say I really don't like watching games where it's just a parade to the free throw line. You know, let's watch some basketball. But, you know, Marquette's a team that lost five of their last six. I think you could argue they were overseeded. Like you said, you know, the non-conference is where they were so good, and Marquette has a high upside. What about the other side? What do we think about them? Murray State, listen, Ja Morant is tremendous. He is really fun to watch. No doubt about that. I do have my concerns about the rest of Murray State's team, though. You know, Murray State, very weak defensive rebounding. Marquette has to go off after their misses here. I think they should get many second chance points in this game. Murray State's strength of schedule, 272nd in the country. Marquette, 58th. Mm-hmm. So, you know, pretty big difference there. And Murray State, when they're dominating teams like, you know, Southeast Missouri State, teams like that in the OVC, that doesn't mean much when you go up against Marquette. I like Ja Morant. I like the fact that he's so fun to watch. I wouldn't bet Murray State here. I could only bet Marquette. Their recent form worries me a bit, but I can't take Murray State with only 4 points here. I mean, definitely a trendy pick is Murray State here, but I don't think the Sharps are going to end up liking Murray State that much. And I will say, as far as the total, I would lean to the over in this game. Total is certainly what my specialty is. And I would say here, Murray State likes to play quick, not great on defense, especially against the good teams they've played. Murray State has some good defensive numbers against some weak offenses in that league. But I think when Murray State plays Marquette, Marquette can get some open looks here. And then Murray State on offense, you know, they're so explosive with Morant that I think they're going to be able to get their points against Marquette as well. So I lean toward Marquette and the over.
You know, I'll tell you this. You know, the big question is, how is Marcus Howard's wrist? He was fine 2 games ago against St. John's. He shot over 50%. Then all of a sudden he goes 1-for-15 against Seton Hall, man. And like you said, a ton of free throws at the end of that game. Bad finish to the year. Murray State hasn't lost since January. They certainly did get lucky in that Ohio Valley tournament against Jacksonville State, though, didn't they? Unfortunately, I had a small future on Jacksonville State there. Ready to hedge that thing. And then the flagrant foul. Oh, my God. That was just some terrible officiating. But, you know, you get that from time to time. You know, Marquette's really a good shooting team on the road. 46.5% on the road, outscoring opponents by 2. Hard schedule this year. Very hard, you know, from what I see. Future NBA prospect Ja Morant for Murray State,
You know, they shoot 48.8% on the road, outscoring opponents by over 10. But like you said, the rebounding, I'm not sure if it's there. And they don't have any top 100 wins until they beat Belmont in the tournament. Absolutely none. You know, and early in the year, Belmont did beat him by 13 points. John Morant averages about 24 points per game. That's over double than their second best player, Shaq Buchanan, at 13. I mean, what's the formula here to beat this team if you're a decent coach, if you're Woj, right? Yeah, what's the formula? You stop their best player. I mean, because if you double off on Morant, he's eventually going to get frustrated and force up some bad stuff, you know? And just kind of pack the line down towards the paint a little bit. Don't let them get anything easy. I mean, you know, we've seen it happen many times. Guys like Ethan Happ for Wisconsin getting double teamed. You know, him, the Badgers losing because of it. You take that player out, you know, this could be actually be a possible blowout here. I have this game with raw numbers, you know, about 4 points-ish, 4.5. But if the coaching has anything to do with this, Marquette should win this game, you know, and I'm sure that they know that they're against the trendy underdog as well. So I have a lean right now to Marquette. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I did want to say, too, that when Murray State beat Belmont in that final game, Belmont was out without their big man, their best big man. I think his name's Mazinski or something like that. So team that Belmont was playing shorthanded in that game. They beat them when they had everybody. Then Murray State comes back and beats them when Belmont doesn't have their best big man. So, I think Murray State still has stuff to prove to me. I Morant doesn't. I mean, he's going to be a really good NBA player. I know that. But, you know, there's four other guys on the court, too, and I would have to take Marquette -3.5 here.
You got Sam Hauser averaging 40% from three. Joey Hauser, 43.3% from three. You know, they can light it up as well, as we've seen before. So if this thing gets below three, let's watch this thing. I'm going to be on Marquette here, and I'm hoping, you know, that three is kind of a key number for me. So let's see if we can get to that three, my man. St. Mary's versus Villanova. Villanova laying 5 points. Over under is 130.5. This game is in Hartford, Connecticut. What are your thoughts, Kyle?
Well, my first thought, let's see. First of all, the bets on this one are pretty much even. You know, you got 46% of the bets on Nova, 54% of the bets on St. Mary's. Money 50-50. So we got nothing to go off of as far as sharp money here. I would take Villanova if I was taking this game. St. Mary's, great win against Gonzaga. You know, if you watch that game, anybody who watched that St. Mary's and Gonzaga game, you have to wonder what happened to Gonzaga. I mean, that was a really, really confusing game. Gonzaga's offense that has been so great, couldn't make a layup, you know, couldn't do anything right. I put off the tweet right after that game. What did Gonzaga do in Vegas the night before? Because, I mean, that was just a wild, wild showing there from Gonzaga. Scored 47 points for the offense that's so, so good. And then obviously there's the conspiracy theorists who say, well, the WCC wanted two teams in the tournament. And I'm not really a big conspiracy person, to be honest with you, but, you know, I couldn't blame somebody for saying that. You know, it did look strange. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's what happened, but Gonzaga did have a really poor showing in that game. And I think St. Mary's being so far from home in this game, you know, is really important, because you look at St. Mary's going all the way across the country here. Villanova, not that far of a trip for them. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say that this is really close to Villanova, but it's certainly a lot closer to Villanova than it is St. Mary's. St. Mary's isn't going to have much of a fan base here. Jay Wright, like I said before, I think he's a top five coach in the country. They're not as talented as they've been in the past, but what's their talent level compared to St. Mary's? It's definitely better. I mean, there's no doubt Nova has the better talent here. If you were just going on raw power rating numbers, I don't think Villanova -5 is a great play. I do think the situation and the fact that St. Mary's just looked so good in their last game, they could even be a bit overconfident based on the way they just won that last game. Mm-hmm. Now they have a long break. Is that long break actually good for them? You know, I don't know if it is or not. You know, you think about the fact of how great you are for beating Gonzaga for that long. Nova runs through the Big East tournament, winning a bunch of close games. I wouldn't think that they would overlook this game. I like Villanova here.
No, I get it. I mean, it's pretty convenient. They get to play in the a West Coast team 200 miles away from home. I did the mileage. St. Mary's is 2,994 miles away. So it's
like the trip.
But that, it really doesn't mean a passionate fan base won't travel. But, man, the line suggests to me that Villanova's playing at home. Personally, you know, if you run the numbers, it's not five.
Right.
Both teams are within five spots from each other on KenPom. St. Mary's only lost to Gonzaga since January. And, you know, they took care of them in the tournament. And like you said, it was Gonzaga's not, that's not Gonzaga. Gonzaga blew this team out before. Villanova squeaked a couple close games, but they're very poised at the end. Villanova's a very good road team, shooting 44.8%, scoring 74.2 points to 69.1. That's about a 5-point variance from what they score on the road and what they allow on the road. I like that. St. Mary's isn't quite as good shooting on the road. 43.5% on the road in a bad conference, right? West Coast Conference. Well, it's not the worst conference, but it's not nearly a Power 5 type conference, right? They only score 66.9 and they allow 64.7 on the road. They're about equally the same height. I do like to look up the heights of these guys. The only thing that St. Mary's could hurt Nova is that I think they're a top 44 team in three-point defense, and Nova takes over half their shots are threes, you know. And the reason that is, I think, is because, you know, they rebound pretty well. Being a West Coast conference, again, makes it hard to tell how accurate all these numbers are. It really is. You got two sides of the country here. The betting angle that sticks out to me is that Nova starts games out slow. And they don't turn it on until the second half quite as much. St. Mary's has really picked up their defense, allowing only 53 points the last eight games. 53 points per game. So St. Mary's is 4-1 to the under the last five games. St. Mary's is the seventh slowest team in the nation at 62.6 possessions per game, while Nova is the 20th slowest at out of 353 teams, as everyone knows, at 63.6 possessions. As long as those threes aren't hitting at a crazy percentage, I like the under here. I'm going to play under 130.5.
Yeah, I like the under as well. And I will say that, you know, the tempo that this game will be played at is certainly one of the slowest ones in the NCAA tournament. And I like your point also about the slow starts from Villanova. Maybe if you like Villanova, you can get a live bet in on this one at a better number, or you can take Villanova in the second half as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, we'll see how these teams kind of start feeling each other out. Great point against for the days off here. That could definitely throw a team that was hot completely off. We've seen that happen many times. Well, let's move on to our next game. We have Old Dominion versus Purdue. Purdue laying about 13 points with a small over-under of 126, played in Hartford, Connecticut again. Do you have any thoughts on this game?
Yeah, you got Old Dominion getting 56% of the bets and 54% of the money. So not much on this one here as far as the money count. Old Dominion's a really good story with Jeff Jones as their head coach. I mean, he's been through so much, and I'm really happy for him that he got here. I think his team really wanted it for him, too. You see the way Old Dominion pulled out some of those games in the Conference USA tournament. You know, I was following some of those games without having – a bet on Old Dominion in that game. I did have an Old Dominion future to win Conference USA, but you know, without having a bet to win that game, I was following Old Dominion in a couple of those games. I thought, well, they lost, you know, they're out of this. And right at the end, they pull out one and you'd wonder, how did they just win that game? They're a scrappy team. They play really hard. Purdue, I mean, I'll be curious to get your take on Purdue also, because I know both of us follow the Big Ten here pretty closely. I'll say that Purdue is a good team. They're very reliant on Edwards. Edwards is a really good player, but I don't like teams that need so much out of one guy. Purdue, according to Haslametrics, a site that I like to check on this, Purdue has the second worst away from home rating out of 353 teams in the country. Mm-hmm. So Purdue has been great at home. On the road, not good. That concerns me quite a bit for them in the long run here. I mean, you look at Purdue and the bracket they're in. Now, Purdue is not terribly close to home here. You know, this is not a cross-country trip, but it's not a close one. You've got an Old Dominion team that plays good defense, slows the game down. We know Old Dominion's going to try to slow this game. They don't want a 70-65 game. They want a 65-63 or a 60-58 or something like that. To me, the only way I could play this game would be Old Dominion on the side. I can't lay those points with Purdue with that kind of away from home rating. They have not proven to me that they can win away from home consistently, even just straight up. And now you got to lay 12.5 or 13 points. I would definitely lean Old Dominion in this game. As far as the total, I'll say I would like the under a little bit when the opener at 129, but 126, you're getting pretty low. I mean, it doesn't take too much to get over a 126. So, probably a slight lean to the under if I had to take something, but not as strong as it would have been. And I have to like Old Dominion some here. I think this game is one of those games that Old Dominion will try to ugly it up, and I think they can do that at least to some degree.
Yeah, you know more about Old Dominion than most people. It's betting this tournament for sure. And that's why I was really curious to hear your take on this game, because I do know a lot about Purdue. And you're right. Carson Edwards takes 37% of their shots. You know, that's crazy. That's a ton. You know, the Conference USA, they have a bunch of teams in the hundreds, right? Kind of on KenPom if you rank them. We know all about the Big Ten. Old Dominion plays slow, thrives off their defense, top 48 on KenPom. I think their pace is, 64.3, 325 they rank in pace. The problem is that their offense is not even in the top 200. They shoot a terrible 39% on the road. They only outscore their opponents by 1.4 on the road, but Purdue's not much better on the road. You know, you think this Purdue team ranked in the top 10 most of the year, their road percentage is 41.2. Okay, they only outscore their opponents by 0.6 on the road. And a lot of that happened in the non-conference. Purdue shoots a ton of threes. And being a tall team, that they're very good at rebounding the ball. So sometimes when those lucky bounces, a little bit more than luck going to a taller team. But those threes, it's kind of an erratic way of playing. And it makes predicting these games kind of hard sometimes. Teams, you're hitting threes, they're higher variance. You know, so I get what you're saying there. You know, Old Dominion, great defense, top 14 in the nation in effective defensive field goal percentage. That helped them beat teams like Syracuse and VCU. This total's been pushed down. You're just like you said, 129-126, but it's starting to get overbought, I think, right? Purdue, they should be motivated here due to their early Big Ten tournament exit. You know, and I don't know how Old Dominion's going to – Carson Edwards is a ball hog, you can say, right? But has Old Dominion faced a lot of NBA players yet? I don't know. I think the spread's about right. But if this total goes down and down, I'm probably going to be a small player on the over, but I just have a lean at 126, and I have a small lean to the over. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I like Old Dominion some here. I'm not sure if I'll bet this one. I'll give you a general thought here real quick. And I know this is one we talked about here before recording this, is that, I don't like to play these games right at the open quite as quick as I do in the regular season. You know, I like to see where the public comes in. There's a lot more public money here. There can also be a lot of things happen from the last game to this game. There can be suspensions, injuries. Different things can change your mind to where I don't really love to play these on Sunday when the game's on Thursday or Friday. So this is one of those cases where I wait and see more often than not. But in this game, I do kind of like Old Dominion.
All right. Well, looks like we're not giving out a ton of picks on this one either. So that's quite all right, though. You know, the best thing for listening to these podcasts for all of our listeners is just, you know, try to take as much information as you can, because this game is all about information. You know, sometimes I've been talked out of sides, and I've thanked people for talking me out of sides before. So, you know, it's great to look at things, and we miss things as handicappers plenty, and we like to get together and talk about these things. So really kind of take that to heart when it comes to betting these games. Try to check as many places as possible. Friday's games, Cincinnati versus Iowa. Iowa +3.5 over under at 130. This is, like you said, in Columbus. Any quick thoughts on this one?
Yeah, well, you know, I have a stronger opinion on this game than a lot of the last ones. I like Cincinnati here. I think Cincinnati has such a big defensive edge in this game. Iowa really in bad form of late. I think it'd be hard for Iowa to just totally, you know, turn on a dime and play great basketball after they've played so poorly here of late. Like I said, a big home court advantage here for Cincinnati, at least worth 1.5 points. That might be not enough. Cincinnati, a big rebounding edge in this game. Really like Jaron Cumberland's play here of late. Cumberland's a very good player for Cincinnati. I don't know who's going to guard him for Iowa. I don't think Iowa has anybody that matches up very well against a guy with, you know, the ability to shoot it from outside, strength to take it to the hoop. You know, this is an Iowa team that I think overachieved early in the season, and then maybe they became a little bit overrated. I've never been a big fan of Iowa. I imagine you're probably not a big fan of Iowa, being a Wisconsin guy either, but I never would say I was a big fan of Iowa to start with. Fran McCaffrey has made me dislike Iowa more than I used to. You know, I mean, this is, you know, you've seen that, you've probably seen that meme about the levels of Fran McCaffrey's, you know, explosions and things like that. Yeah. But, you know, that it can get pretty, it can be pretty intense from them. You know, Nick Cronin's a pretty intense coach as well. So you've got quite the coaching battle here in this game. I think that Cincinnati with a big home court advantage, Cincinnati playing well coming into this. I don't think Cincinnati overlooks a game like this just because they beat Houston in the title game. I think it gives them more confidence, and then the home court advantage helps them quite a bit here. I do like Cincinnati -3.5.
You know, I'm glad you have a side because I don't yet, but I think this one says possibly live betting all over it to me. I really wanted to fade Cincinnati after that Houston game. I did. Houston only shot 30%. You know, and Cincinnati didn't have the best finish. They did in the tournament, obviously, and their defense showed up. They started looking like the Cincinnati we expected. And I don't know how much of, you know, that game is Houston playing bad and just the Bearcat defense finally waking up. But you're right. They play at home. You almost got to look at it like this at home. Iowa's been bad on the road. They shoot 44% on the road, which is okay, but they give up 75.5 points per game on the road and only score 74.8. Cincy's, if you look at their road, they're bad on the road at 40.7% shooting, but they outscore their opponents by about 4, 66 to 62, you know, which says good things about their defense. You know, being the Bearcats are essentially at home, I'd rather look at what they do at home, and they actually shoot 45.2% at home. So I like that a little bit better. Both teams did well on neutral courts, Iowa winning 4 out of 5 and Cincinnati winning all 5 of their neutral court games. The thing that worries me the most about the Bearcats is what happens if Jaron Cumberland just happens to get in foul trouble. You know, only one other player besides him averages double-digit points, and that's Keith Williams, and it's only 10. You know, it's Jaron Cumberland or nothing for this team. You know, from a scoring perspective, the Bearcats are not deep. Iowa is one of the best teams this year in drawing fouls, okay? They rank 14th in the nation at free throw attempts over field goal attempts. That's what worries me a little bit. Now, it was more prominent earlier in the season. It kind of faded out. But I wonder what the Zebras are going to do here. If Cumberland gets 2 fouls before the 10-minute mark by chance, that's when you stay away from this game. But if he's, you know, looking pretty clean, live bet the heck out of Cincinnati is possibly, you know, what I have. So no lean right now and no play. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I like your point about the fouls. I was just looking on KenPom as you talked there. Cincinnati, a team with a very low 2-foul participation rate. So Cronin's not playing guys if they have 2 fouls in the first half. So if Cumberland does get in foul trouble early, maybe you look to play Iowa, and then in the second half, cover that back with Cincinnati. You might hit both sides of it. So I really like the point about the fouls.
Awesome. All right. Well, we're rolling along, and we have a few more left, and we've already taken a ton of time. So let's get right into it. UC Irvine versus Kansas State. Kansas State laying -4.5 over under 119 in San Jose, California. This one's pretty simple, I think. What are your thoughts, Kyle?
Well, the issue for me about this one is that everybody likes UC Irvine here. I mean, I can't find anybody who likes Kansas State. So we'll see. Maybe you have a different opinion. I'll be curious to get your take on this one too. But 71% of the bets on UC Irvine, 69% of the money on UC Irvine, fading trendy underdogs has been a very profitable system early in the NCAA tournament. So if you're just going on systems and angles, you'd be taking Kansas State in this one. The problem is, like we've said before, Dean Wade matters a lot here. If I knew Dean Wade was playing, even if this line was higher than what it was, I'd like Kansas State. But, you know, this is one where I'm very concerned about UC Irvine, how much they're loved. I think UC Irvine's a good team. And I will say, I pay a lot of attention to the Big West. I've made good money in past years and this season with totals betting it in the Big West. UC Irvine's a good team. They play very good defense. I think Russell Turner's a really good head coach. They're a deep team. They don't have one guy that can get you. They have a bunch of different guys can take over at any point. Irvine's going to play hard defense. Kansas State is really good on defense, though. Like I said before, I think Kansas State's really good on defense, even without Dean Wade. Mm-hmm. Offense is the question mark.
Right.
Gosh, it's so hard to take an under that's this low. I mean, what a really low under at 119. I could not take the over in this game, though. I wouldn't take the over with your money. So, well, maybe with your money.
Well, thank you.
I'm just kidding. No, but I don't like the over. I think this could be a really low scoring game. You wouldn't think UC Irvine would want to turn this into a track meet. They don't usually play that way. They're a team that likes to win the low scoring games, win with their defense. I will say the trendy underdogs one, I want to give you a specific number. Teams get it that are favorite, getting 49% of public bets or less, are 58% ATS since 2005, and that's in the NCAA tournament overall. So I think it's even stronger in the first couple rounds. So pay close attention to that, and this is certainly a trendy underdog. I want to see what happens with this line, and obviously I want to find out about Dean Wade's status.
For sure. Yeah, you're right. This was a public dog again. So many public dogs, 5.5 down to 4.5. Yeah, I don't see a lot of K-State fans coming to this game unless Dean Wade was playing. Big West Conference, you know, not that great of a conference. They haven't lost since January 16th. Their only top 50 win was against St. Mary's. They're drudged by double digits against Butler and Utah State early. You know, that's UC Irvine. Irvine shoots well on the road, 45%, and they outscore their opponents by 8.2. But looking at the schedule, it's hard to get excited to bet them. You know, K-State shoots only 42.3% on the road, but they outscore their opponents by 5.5, showing that great D. Now, everyone says Zion Williamson's the most valuable guy in college basketball, but looking at what K-State does without Dean Wade, they are completely bipolar. You know, without Wade, they got stomped by Marquette by 12, lost to Tulsa by 1, barely beat Southern Miss, and barely beat George Mason. You know, so with Wade, you know, they beat teams like Texas, Baylor, Iowa State, TCU, Oklahoma. They also really dominated their neutral games, winning 5 out of 6 of those. So the cap is simple. If Wade plays, I have Kansas State winning this game by 9, 65-56. Without Wade, it could be a flat-out loss. This is where I'm going to try to find out and beat the line move. So everybody pay attention here. I'll see if I can tweet it out when I get that injury news. But right now it's no play. And I like K-State if Wade is playing. Let's move right into Oregon versus Wisconsin. My Badgers. Wisconsin is now back to about 1.5 favorite. Over-unders 117. San Jose, California. You go first, Kyle.
First of all, Wisconsin, a team that, you know, Ethan Happ is so good. You know, we've talked about this before. I think Ethan Happ means so much to this team. Like you said, he gets double teamed. He has to try to pass out of that double team. Wisconsin's guard play has not been very good at all at the end of the season. I'll say I had Wisconsin in that game against Ohio State. So I go against my team with Wisconsin. And the good news, I ended up winning the bet. And like I said online, the bad news is I lost a few years off my life. I mean, that was usually I'm very good at taking this. You know, I do pretty good about not getting too upset about losses. But that was going to be a really bad loss with Wisconsin. I think I had -2.5 there. So, you know, when they get that huge lead and they give it away, I think, you know, that was kind of a blueprint for teams. You know, what Ohio State did with that press definitely bothered Wisconsin. And I don't think Ohio State's great at that press. It worries me for Wisconsin because Oregon's going to throw that zone press at Wisconsin here. They're going to play that zone defense. can Wisconsin beat that zone defense? I think that's the key to this game. If, you know, if you asked me going into it what I thought I was going to like, I would have probably said Oregon. You're only getting 1.5 points, though. And they did play in the Pac-12. The Pac-12 is bad as it is. I don't have any strong feel for this game. What do you think on this one?
If Wisconsin gets beat by the press again, then Greg Gard's really got to go, because I think everybody's been screaming this weakness. I mean, it's also the Hap free throws and some of the other teams. The guards have been playing terrible lately. But then sometimes when they play the middle class and under, they destroy them. You know, it's like, who is this? You know, Davidson hitting all his threes, Trice hitting all his threes. What is going on here? You know, Oregon, the trendy underdog, the 12-5 upset. And it's easy to see why they finished off the Pac-12 in dominant fashion. Wisconsin struggled at the United Center, only hitting 35% of field goals against Michigan State, 11% from three, which was extremely bad. And I blame the guards for that. And I also blame the coaching a little bit, but that's another factor. That's another subject. This line went all the way to Oregon -1.5, and that's where I hit Wisconsin. The sharper bettors hit Wisconsin at that line as well. And then it went back up to 1.5. You look at all the power ratings. You look at all the Bart Torvicks, the Ken Palms. They have Wisconsin by 4 or 5 points here. And if you're a fade the public sports bettor, then this is at least a no play for you, in my opinion. Right. You know, I think this is probably going to finish at about a pick 'em, in my opinion. I mean, does anyone care that Wisconsin's defense ranks third in the nation? I don't know. That's what literally you're third in the nation. And then what happened to the Pac-12 being so bad? What happened to the Pac-12 being one of the worst conferences and only deserves one team in? But then let's all go bet Oregon. So it's kinda, there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't make sense. But I think these team, you know, the Badgers shoot 43.9%, almost 44% on the road. Oregon shoots 42.1% in a much weaker conference. Wisconsin has some very experienced players on the team. Just like you said, Ethan Happ, great big man. Davison played all last year. Trice was hurt, but he's played before. But Iverson's been playing 4 years. You know, Ravers is his second year, filled in last year a lot. You know, people think that San Jose is a Oregon fan thing, but they're still over 500 miles away, and Wisconsin travels well. And they have a big following in California, man. Trust me, I've been up there, and there's a lot of Badger bars in, like, the San Francisco area. I've frequented a few of them, one called Aces I really liked, actually. You know, I got to tell you, you know, Oregon did beat Washington, and Washington's probably got the best D on paper, but they've been faltering lately. I think Oregon, what they did the last part of their season, you know, they spent all their energy getting to the NCAA tournament. That was their goal. They got to the NCAA tournament. Now, I have to fade the perception here, and that's why I took them at +1.5. But to be honest with you, I like Wisconsin to 3 points. That's where I kind of put it here. I understand their faults, their free throw shooting, the press, probably not even worth a big bet. But this is also a system play. The fact that Wisconsin only shot 35% last game, man. So I'm going to go with my Badgers. I know it's a homer pick. Any final thoughts?
I wonder what you think about the total sitting at 117.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you this: if my whole idea of Wisconsin should come back and shoot a ton and at 50%, then I'm not sure if I like the total. But looking at the way Oregon's been playing defense and how terrible Wisconsin has been the last few games, the only way I would go is under. But that's just too low for me.
Agreed on both. Yeah, that would be my lean, but I can't take under 117.
Yeah, Wisconsin plays so slow. And that's part of the reason why they're ranked third in the nation on defense. So just people know that when teams play extremely slow, it kind of ups their rank, you know, their ranking on defense. So just there's a correlation there. Let's move right into Georgia State versus Houston. Houston laying 11.5 points. Over under is at 141.5. This game's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. What do we have?
Well, the first thing I want to say is Georgia State plays that zone defense all the time. Georgia State's a team I followed pretty closely there in the Sun Belt. All about the zone defense, trying to stay out of foul trouble. The problem for Georgia State is they cannot get a defensive rebound. That is a major problem for them, even in the Sun Belt. If they can't get a defensive rebound in the Sun Belt, how are they going to get a defensive rebound against Houston? I think Houston's going to absolutely crush Georgia State on the boards here. That's my concern. If you're a Georgia State bettor here, I would not take Georgia State in this game. I don't think 11.5 points is enough. 73% of the bets are on Houston and 59% of the money. So the public does like Houston as well. I wouldn't say that I'd be rushing to take a lay 11.5 points either. I think my strongest lean in this game is probably the under. Georgia State has to slow down in this game, and I don't think they want to get into a track meet. They're going to try to set up that zone and slow the game down. The problem with the under certainly is that Houston could be playing essentially volleyball on the offensive glass. I think Houston gets a big enough lead here to where under 142, 141.5 might have a decent amount of value. And you find in the NCAA tournament, with the big spreads and the high seeds, you have more unders than you do overs based on the fact that there's not that foul fest at the end of the game. So that's kind of my thought process for liking the under at least a little bit in this game.
Yeah, and obviously the big teams turn it off with 5 minutes left and run the clock. Right. So that's a great point as well. You know, Houston looked terrible in their AAC championship game. And like I said earlier, shooting 30%. Georgia State went on a very nice run, finishing off their competition in the Sun Belt. I think the only one ranked higher was Georgia Southern there, if I can remember right. Houston's, you know, they're a much better team when Corey Davis and Armani Brooks are hitting. Both of them shot less than 25% against Cincy. It was kind of like watching Wisconsin play Michigan State that last game, except Houston's looked at as a much better team. I think they would have lost to East Carolina that game. I'm sorry to say it, Kyle. I think Houston would have lost to East Carolina in that championship game. Georgia State's pretty good shooting on the road, 45%. But they actually been outscored on the road by 1 point per game. The only top 65 teams that they faced was Liberty and Creighton. And Georgia State got destroyed by Liberty and Creighton. You know, so Houston shoots 45% on the road, having a much harder schedule, and has an amazing 15-point variance on the road for points scored and points allowed. That's only second to Virginia. Virginia's got the biggest away variance, 16. Houston, or they're next at 15, and then Gonzaga's at 13 when it comes to points away and points given up away. So that's some hopefully a fun fact for everyone to use. But Georgia State, their defense only ranks 137th in KenPom. This is, again, a system play for me. I'm going to bet Houston minus 11.5. I'm going against the narrative here. So any final thoughts?
No, nothing else other than my dog, my puppy is here laying right beside me. He keeps yawning. So if you can hear something, I think he's trying to get my attention. He wants to go play or something. I don't know if that means that we should take the underdog in this one. I don't think so.
Oh, geez. That screwed up my karma here. You know, maybe your dog can fill out a bracket for us, because chances are, right, if he does, right, it'll be apparently the kind of the first.
See, it sounds like he wants to. He wants to be the next guest or something here on the podcast. But no, I mean, I think this is a lean to the under and nothing else for me in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand that completely. Let's move on to Liberty versus Mississippi State. Mississippi State laying 6.5. Over under is 134 in San Jose, California. Do you have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I'll make this one pretty quick. I'd say Liberty getting 72% of the bets, 71% of the money here. This line has gone from 8 down to 6.5. I think this line might go to 6 here. So if you like Mississippi State, you probably go ahead and wait. Again, trendy underdog. Listen, the public loves underdogs the first weekend of March Madness. You know, public always bets favorites almost every time other than this. But the public is going to bet the underdogs in a lot of these games. Why are they betting the underdog in these games? Because somebody on TV told them that this upset could happen.
Right.
You know, and that's the biggest point I would make here is that don't bet these games with the underdog because you heard somebody on TV say that they're going to put this in their bracket. You know, if you want to bet Liberty here, have a different reason than that. That's fine. But, you know, to me, both of these teams are overseeded. They, you know, two teams that I probably would have gone against if I had a better matchup. Liberty tries to slow down the tempo in a big way here. Maybe the under. I think Mississippi State's not as good as a normal 5 seed. I think Liberty probably should have been a 13 seed instead of a 12. I can't get excited about anything in this game.
No, I absolutely get it there. I was just trying to look up, is Mississippi State still have their guy injured? What's his name?
Weatherspoon.
Yeah, Nick Weatherspoon. Is he still hurt?
Yeah, I think he's is he have a suspension or an injury? I know that there's been, I think he's suspended. So I think there's no no update on whether he will play. And I tried to read up on that one. And I think Ben Howland is intentionally not saying much about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that would be my worry if somehow he actually popped into this game. It says suspension. So yeah, I knew it was something. And when I handicapped this game, you know, I figured him out anyway. Liberty had opportunities. They still haven't beaten a top 100 team, but they had opportunities against Georgetown and Alabama, and they lost by like 9 and 10 points to those two teams. The problem here is that Mississippi State on paper to me looks like a fade team, and Liberty looks like a team to be on just on straight paper. You know, the Flames, they play very slow, fourth in the nation, right? And they shoot an amazing 48.8% on the road. They outscore their opponents at 6.8 points on the road. You know, that's really good for Liberty there. You know, the team's improved out throughout the season. You saw them beat Lipscomb twice. The Rebels, on the other hand, up and down swings all year, finished the season kind of cold, only to be able to beat the bad teams. You know, they beat the Texas A&Ms, right? But they haven't had a top 50 win since February 2nd. So I like Liberty's defense and the pace. So when it comes to defense and pace, you know, I kind of like the points here. And I took it at +7. And if you can find a +7, it's a play. At +6.5, it's a lean. But I also lean under 134. So I am on your side right there, Kyle, leaning 134 on this game. Let's move right into UCF versus VCU. Very interesting game. VCU's at about a +1. UCF's favored by round one. Over-under at 126.5. Played in Columbia, South Carolina. Any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, first of all, I think this is a great game as a fan. You know, this is a game that you're going to want to tune into. Very, very interesting game here. I hope Evans plays for VCU as a fan, because I think he's their most important player for VCU. So I see he's still questionable. No update on him. Helps them that they play the late game on Friday night, so he has the most time to get ready that you could possibly have. I will say, you know, what happens here when VCU starts pressing UCF? They're not used to seeing that press. I mean, that's going to be something totally different than what they've seen throughout the course of the season. At the same time, you could say VCU plays nobody like Taku Fall. You know, you got that huge guy in the middle of, as far as height, really tall guy in the middle of the paint there, just swatting shots, changing shots. You know, he changes the entire complexion of how you need to run offense. You know, you can't just meander your way down into the paint and try to get one of those fouls. He's going to swat everything away. So both of these teams are very good at drawing fouls. That would be my concern with taking the under in a game like this. I think that a lot of people say, well, UCF's so good on defense, VCU so good on defense. Yes, but both of them play relatively quickly. And we have a total of 126.5 here. My lean would be the over here, especially if Evans plays. As far as the side, I think this is a 50-50 game. So, I mean, I see UCF now favored by 1.5. I think that has a lot to do with the fact of the unknown about Evans' status here.
Yeah, and you like the total over because of the fouling?
Yeah, I think that both teams get to the line so much, and they both play pretty quickly. VCU obviously plays really quickly. UCF on offense tries to push the tempo. They slow people down on defense because of that, you know, strong defense with Taku Fall in the middle, and they switch up man and zone. But I would say that I think that the tempo here, while I don't think it'll be blazing fast, it's going to be far faster than a lot of games that have a total of 126.5.
Yeah, the fouling could be an issue. And I've seen I tied a total when VCU against Rhode Island. They scored about 40 points in the first half. The total was like 135. And I'm like, this is a winner. Oh, my God. And it went, that thing fouling at the end destroyed me. But this is exactly the reason why I have this play. You know, this is a very interesting game. Two mid-major type basketball conferences facing off. Both teams coming off disappointing losses in their conference tournaments. You have amazing defense with VCU ranked 7th on KenPom. And then you have the tallest guy in basketball, just like you said, Taco Fall, 7'6". VCU plays a little bit faster than average, but they shoot poorly. 43% on the road in a weaker division, you know, than a bigger division. So UCF shoots a nice 46% on the road and outscores much of their opponents. But how, just like you said, how are they going to go against that pressure defense, the full court press, you know, that VCU throws out there? You know, the edge on offense goes to UCF, ranking 90th in effective field goal percentage, while VCU only ranks 177th. So you got one a little bit of edge on offense, one a big edge on defense. Both teams so bad at shooting free throws, though. Neither of them are over 70% free throw shooting, you know. And so, you know, I was looking at that. And I was also looking at the fact that VCU is a bad three-point shooter. They rank 330th in the nation at only 30.7%. And then you have UCF at free throws ranking 333rd, 64.5%. So this kind of goes into what I like. I think the play is the first half under, okay? And the reason that is because they're going to have to feel each other out. Two different styles, like you said, they're going to press. I think there's going to be some clock running. I do agree there's going to be a ton of fouling at the end. But, you know, both teams, with how bad they shoot free throws, I think the free throws happen at the very end. I'm going to take the first half under 58.5. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. If you like the under, take the first half under based on the fact that, you know, these are two totally different defenses than what they see in the regular season. So they, you know, having to feel the other team out makes a lot of sense. And then I also think that there's a very real chance of a foul fest or even overtime in this game. If you like the full game under, that would be certainly very tricky.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if you start seeing a bunch of fouls happen in the first half, you know, then that over might be done, unfortunately. But, you know, if some players are being in foul trouble, you know, they're going to have to sit. So keep that in mind, you know, for the second half of the game as well. So like you said, there's going to be some fouls. I'm just thinking the fouls will be in the second half. Let's move right into the final game we are discussing, Kyle. Your Ohio State Buckeyes versus Iowa State. Iowa State's laying about 5.5, over under 139.5. This place is in Big 12 country, Tulsa, Oklahoma. What's going on with this one?
We've got Iowa State with 69% of the bets, 62% of the money. Look, Ohio State is not nearly as good a team without Caleb Wesson. So I think the first thing I would say is, if you look at Ohio State's games there where they played Purdue, Northwestern, games like that, without Caleb Wesson, that's not the way to handicap this game. Wesson is easily their most important player, not even close. You know, when he's in there, Ohio State's a decent team. When he's not in there, Ohio State's no good. I mean, they're just, they play hard. I think Holtman's a good coach. He'll have more talent in the future. Ohio State's not a great team even with him, but they are far more competitive. Iowa State, you know, to me, a team that wasn't really healthy throughout the course of the season. I think Iowa State certainly has a higher upside than does Ohio State. You know, obviously this is coming from the Buckeyes fan, but I always try to see it objectively. I think Ohio State will try to slow the tempo of this game down. You see a total of 140. I think Iowa State will be trying to push. The Buckeyes will be trying to slow the game down here. I think that total's pretty fair, though. I don't see any big edge there. If I had to play this game, I'd probably take Iowa State and lay the points, but I don't have to play the game, and I don't think I will. So I'm just going to watch this one as a fan, and you know, I think this line's just about right.
You know, it sucks playing the team that it's your favorite, especially if you double lose. So that's
right. Yeah. So,
and then all of a sudden you fade them, and then you lose stupidly like that Wisconsin Ohio State. Well, you almost did. It went overtime. It was a bad beat for anybody, you know, on that side. So I totally get what you're saying. It looks like Ohio State, you know, is going to Big 12 country, and I think there's something to say about that. It's not like it's close to Iowa State to go to Tulsa, but it's still the feeling there. You know, they are a terrible team without Caleb West and the Buckeyes. You are right. And you got an offense versus defense game. Iowa State ranks 9th in the country in offense. Ohio State ranks 29th in defense. But their offense of Ohio State is only 75th against Iowa State's 59th defense. I want to fade Ohio State. I really do. And I thought when I was doing the handicap, I was going to be taking, you know, Iowa State. But it just didn't work out because Iowa State's really been faltering. You know, they were so great as an away team for a while, and then if you look at the last month, they've been getting their butts kicked on the road. So I don't know what happened to them there, but I'm worried. And now they're playing, you know, that slower style Ohio State game. Ohio State kind of played better, without Wesson. With Wesson, the last two games is what I'm trying to say is with Wesson,
they did well. They beat Indiana, and then they only lost to State by 7, you know? And I think State was laying a lot more than 7 in that game. So Ohio State, they're kind of unpredictable here. I don't know what we're going to see out of them. If I had to play this game, gun to the head, I would lean Ohio State plus 5.5 just because of the weirdness of it. But I'm not playing this game, Kyle, so we don't have to worry about that, my man. Well, man, I took enough of your time, Kyle. Do you have anything, any picks for our listeners that you'd like to give out?
I have a free pick here for a game here on Thursday evening, and I already know that you like it because you alluded to this as we were talking about it, and I tried to not say too much because I knew this was going to be my free pick at the end of the show. St. Mary's and Villanova under the total. I'm going to take under 130.5. Just the tempo of this game, you already see sharp money taking this one here. As the line got up to 131, it's been hit back down. 73% of the money now on the under. Villanova is a team to me that, like you said, shoots so many three-pointers. St. Mary's does defend the three well. I think St. Mary's offense has been so efficient in that conference. Villanova's defense is far more long and athletic than what they're used to going against. So I think St. Mary's offense will have trouble getting going here. And with the pace that it's at, 130.5 is not a terribly low number. So I'll take St. Mary's and Villanova under.
Fantastic, Kyle. Always love it when you're going on my side. As a matter of fact, I think we agree with most of our games here. There's only like a couple slight differences. So that's awesome. I always feel more comfortable about my betting when that happens, Kyle. How can our listeners benefit from your picks and knowledge this weekend?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I've got quite a few plays here for the NIT, CBI, all the smaller tournaments as well. Don't forget about ones like that. You know, there's some money to be made in those. I'm going to give you a special offer here, Oddsbreakers listeners. $249 for the rest of my plays for college basketball the rest of the year. I'm 115-79 so far this year in college basketball. Ooh. So it's been a really, really good, really good season so far. And I'm certainly not one to beat my chest or to get too low when I'm down, because I know that the streaks and slumps are part of the business. It's going to happen. But, you know, college basketball has been a really good sport for me in the long term. And hopefully can keep this run going here. I've won 7 straight picks as we record this, and I'm 115-79. So March Madness All Access Pass, which includes the NIT, CBI, CIT, everything you can have college basketball the rest of the year, $249. You can send me a message, Kyle@huntersportspicks.com or @KyleHunterPicks on Twitter.
Fantastic, Kyle, and thank you so much for coming on again. Really, really appreciate it. I get such great feedback from our listeners every single time you come on. If you guys have any questions for Kyle, please tweet him @KyleHunterPicks. If you have any questions for us, please tweet us @TheOddsBreakers. We're more than happy to give you a side or a lean on some of the games that you are looking at. Have a fantastic weekend in March Madness, and go get some wins.